This is Shutters Inc. with Bruce Williams and Glyn Lavender.
Hi, and welcome to episode 443 of Shutters Inc. This is Bruce Williams from ShuttersIncPodcast.com. And this week in Cheetah's Paradise, from creativephotoworkshops.com.au and using a PC and not a Mac, it is Mr. Glyn Lavender. How are you?
Cheetah's Paradise. Yes. What does that mean?
See, you don't follow the show notes or you'd be in on the gag.
I don't understand.
No, you do not understand. Just let it go straight through to the keeper, mate.
Will people be laughing at me?
Oh, yes.
Perfect.
How have you been?
You'd be a bit gentle with me. I've had a pretty horrible day.
Oh, why?
Well, it's kind of hard to say. We came home from, took the kids out swimming today at the swimming pool. Right. And we came home and the dog's on the back veranda with a rabbit in its mouth.
Oh, okay.
Right? Which is okay, urban environment. Which is kind of weird.
Are we talking wild or domestic rabbit?
Here's where the rub. Yeah. There's no blood or mess that I could see. You're right. The kids are freaking, of course.
Yeah.
But it's the rabbit's like, it looks to be a white rabbit, but it's like brown, it's dirt brown colour. Right?
Yep.
Then it hits us. It's not a wild rabbit. It's the neighbor's blue ribbon prize winning freaking rabbit. They bloody
breed.
Yeah. Oh. So we got the dog out, washed the dirt off, had a bit of a look. Yeah, no marks that the dog had got out or anything. Neighbors were out. So I popped over the fence, put it back in the cage. And I don't know, half an hour, 40 minutes later, screaming from next door.
Yeah.
So I casually, gee, what's going on? And they could hardly speak. And they're pointing at the dead rabbit in their cage. And I'm going, what, your rabbit died? They're going, yeah, 3 days ago, but we buried it. And now it's back in the cage.
Nice.
We don't actually have a dog.
Right.
It may not be a true story, but it was...
It was good, yeah.
Somewhat amusing. And since we're light on content this week, I thought we'd stretch it out for a minute and a half.
Oh, we're actually not light on content.
Well, I'm light on content.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
I'm incontinent. You know, no, this doesn't say right, does it? I mean, it's content, malcontent. That's probably closer to it all.
Right. Excellent. Excellent.
So have you been in these 3 or 4 days since we last spoke?
5 days, yeah, pretty good. Pretty good.
Acne photos?
No, not this week, although I will be doing another staff portrait on Thursday of one or two of the news team in Newcastle.
I did some corporate headshots this week too.
Oh, cool.
Trouble and Strife needed some new corporate headshots, always been black and white.
Mm-hmm.
Just the way she preferred it. New company needs colour one, so yeah.
Yeah, right. So what's she doing? You didn't tell us she got a job.
Oh, she got a job ages ago.
Oh, what's she doing?
I don't know.
Right, okay.
I'm not so sure she knows.
Right.
She's like doing like what she did before.
Right.
But they changed the name, the title of it, so it sounds either more impressive or less impressive, but maybe not impressive to anyone because no one knows what that is in the industry.
Okay.
So everyone, she used to be a business development manager, and everyone in the industry knows what that role is.
Yeah.
But she's like an investment systems consultant, I don't know, something consultant. And, of course, no one knows what it is because it's a made-up name.
Yeah. Right.
And she's gone from working for, I think it was a funds manager she was working for before, to a platform, a funds platform.
Okay.
I don't know, Bruce. Right. But she's gone from being in charge of Victoria and Tasmania to being in charge of Victoria, Western Australia, South Australia and Tasmania.
Wow.
And a pay rise. So
they can.
So basically, and the place that gave her made her redundant is in hell. Everyone's hate, just the culture's just dead. Everyone, it was the best thing possible for her to get the flick. So,
yeah, right.
And lots of people want to leave, but they don't want to leave without hopefully getting made redundant for payouts.
Right.
So they're sticking out the hell.
Yeah.
Kind of hilarious. But, yeah, so she's been there, I don't know, 2 months, 2.5 months now, I guess.
Oh, okay.
So, nice. Yeah, still have no idea what she does. And it's completely the way they do the stuff that they do and the stuff that they do with the things that they do is not remotely like the stuff that she did with the stuff that she had with the people she worked with.
Say what?
Exactly. So now the stuff she's having to learn a whole bunch of stuff about the stuff she didn't know much about stuff that she doesn't really know much about, and talk to people who know even less.
Right.
Apparently.
Fantastic.
And she's working for a company that's trying to, because we've had this massive banking royal commissions here in Australia, as we'd know.
Right.
And it's changed the whole way financial institutions are going to do business going forward in the future.
Yep.
But their company's decided we're going to jump on all those changes before they're mandated, so we're ahead of the curve.
Right.
So they're all trying to change all the stuff that they do for the people that they do it for with the people that they've got, but no one really knows what they're doing because it hasn't been done before and it's all new and it's, yeah.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. So she's having fun.
Excellent. Well, while you've been rabbiting on,
yeah,
I've just sent you a shared link to a Google Drive folder which has the black and white processed versions of the ABC portraits.
Let's have a look-see. Do they stand up at the desk, do they?
Some of them do, yeah. Actually, most of them do. Because the desks are height adjustable.
Yeah.
Like they've got little electronic motors, yeah, so you can drop them down if you want to sit. But no, they all stand up.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5. I can see 6 there. Yeah. Is that how many you sent?
Yep.
With the exception of the first one, they're all really good.
Okay. What's the first one?
The first one's some old bloke. What's his name? Hang on a sec. Go back. Turto.
Right.
So it's just his facial expression. I don't know. It looks like he's listening to someone off camera, not on headphones.
Right.
So if he's a radio guy, mm-hmm. I can imagine if he's listening, to someone in the headphones, but his facial expression looks like he's looking at and smiling at someone off camera. So it's just a bit disconcerting, the whole storyline.
Interestingly, he wasn't. He was just staring into vacant space.
Oh, it doesn't mean that's what he was doing. This is what he looks like he's doing.
Right.
Okay. So he looks bad. Yeah. Oh, the other ones though, the next one, the lady,
it's
nice, beautiful. Well, then I'm in order. I'm looking at them in order.
Oh, okay, Kaya.
Mm-hmm. Possibly. I can't see. I've got a full screen picture, so I can't see any names.
Right.
Yeah, lady standing up.
Yep.
Lovely, nicely lit.
Yep.
Nicely done.
Thank you.
Lady sitting down.
Oh, yes, she's sitting down. Yes, you're right.
Oh, she's really, really short.
Yeah.
Nicely done. Good connection. Next one's my favourite, the guy.
Yep. Hammo.
He looks Yeah, it's really good. That, my only concern of that one is that little highlight of light on his right eye, his left eye out, camera right.
Highlight. Okay. Right.
You see it?
As in the catch light in his eye.
No, that little, the top of his eyelid is lit.
Oh, okay. On the far side, on the dark side.
On his camera right, his left.
Right. Right. I get you.
See that?
Yep. I get you.
So that's a big problem. I'd fix that.
Yeah.
I've just done something to my screen. It's really cool. Oh, I was leaving message notes. Look at that. But he's certainly the most enigmatic character of the group. I would. And this is a problem. See, being a non, if it's aimed at a non audio guy type person, and it's aimed at the listener / viewers, I would have had his hand touching one of those controls,
right?
Or just a little bit more connection to it, because they're there, and you know, it's like he's not doing his job then, rather than just sort of, you know, waiting for his lunch to arrive in between the two. The next one, the guy talking into the microphone.
Mm-hmm.
It's great because he's got a really engaging, especially looking like he's in the middle of telling a good story. Yep. So that's really cool.
That was the idea. Yep.
Yeah, and then the morning duo, whoever they are, really good. Yeah, really engaging as well. So look, great job.
Thank you.
A couple of little tweaks. This is the eye. The eye is the biggest one that concerns me.
Right.
Is that Turto? What's he called? Turto.
His surname is Turton.
Oh, okay. So yeah, good job with those, dude. Well,
thank
done.
You. Nice work.
Right. I imagine they're meant to be in colour.
No.
They're
meant to be in black and white.
They're in black and white?
Yep. Why do you ask?
I just thought, yeah, it seems unusual to use black and white in trying to get media personalities accepted by the public because colour is warmer and friendlier.
Well, the station manager is a bit of a photography
person. Oh, say no more. Person. Yeah, yeah.
No, she doesn't do a bad photo, to be honest.
Yeah, but doesn't she should have say in these things.
Why shouldn't she?
It's not about art. It's about bloody ratings. It's about bloody getting connected. It's about keeping your job.
Yeah, but these are about, you know, just portraits of the on-air staff that show in the entrance foyer of the station.
I've in the foyer. As long as it's not, if it's online, I wouldn't like them online. In the foyer of the station.
No.
Oh, it's okay then. Yeah. That's just fine. Because you imagine, you can see what I'm saying online.
Yes.
You lose. Yeah, it's no warmth.
Right.
And that's what you're trying to get as a, especially with audio radio, where you've got to imagine the people.
Yep.
Talking. If you only ever see them as this black and white monochrome nothing.
Yep.
Versus a warm, vibrant person. has a big impact. Yeah, the colour has a big impact.
Yeah.
Interesting.
For sure.
What we're going on for tonight?
Okay, so you've sent me a link to an e-book. What is this e-book?
I've been partaking in. Me and my fellow Discovery photo tour leaders have put together an e-book
on
better travel photography. We've all put together 5 tips.
Right.
Of course, me being who I am, I did 6 because I had to be one better than everybody else.
Of course.
So there's some good tips there from, you know, there's probably 25, 30 tips.
Excellent.
And the ebook for people and photos and bits of, you know, wordage and stuff like that. So
yep.
If anyone's wanting some tipola.
Nice.
Yeah.
I shall endeavour to have a look at that before I go to Sri Lanka.
There you go. Perfect.
Yeah.
Quickly timed.
Cool. What else you got?
Me?
Yeah.
Oh, nothing I really want to talk about.
Oh, why is that?
I just can't be bothered.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
Oh, this industry is boring sometimes, Bruce.
Is it?
I came across one thing on Petapixel about this woman photographer. Actually, it was not from the. It was someone complaining about a woman photographer who had photographed. She was doing an A to Z photo project.
Okay.
And when it came to I, she did eyes for Indian.
Right.
And dressed her little boy up as an Indian, as a Native American, the First Nations,
right.
First
yeah,
people.
Yeah, yeah, as in the feathered headdress, yep.
And photographed him. And then she's put it on quite a few different social media pages and groups. And it's been ongoing discussions about cultural appropriation.
Right.
And whether it's acceptable to take someone else's culture for your project or whatever you deem as for getting likes on social media or whatever it may be.
Okay.
And look, and I have a problem with it always. I've had a problem for years. It just never sits right when I see blatant taking of other people's looks.
Okay. Right.
But at the same time, the whole world has appropriated culture, which is why we have so much. Like, just look at the English language as an example. Is so embedded with so much different cultural appropriation and words from different languages and everything else. It's a real muddy area.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I look at the photo and it offends me.
Oh, okay.
But and I know.
Does it still offend you in the context of 26 images that are a set? Like, does it still bother you? Like, if it was a one-off, I could understand.
Oh, no, I think when she gets to the end, she's doing N for nigger.
Really?
No, of course not. But is it not just as offensive? If you are offended by being called an Indian, if you are a
Native First American, Nation, right?
Well, not even Native people even offended by the term Native American. Not not Native Americans necessarily, but other people say, well, they weren't Native; they were they came from somewhere else too. So First Peoples is the
right,
yeah, the
politically
the most
correct.
And it's a balance between. But, I mean, at the same time, if what you do offends people, some people, shouldn't you think about that? I don't know.
Though, that in this day and age, no matter what you do, someone's going to be offended.
Yeah, but offended, different things. If I am of a persecuted race that's been hundreds of years of literally persecution and horrendous things done to them.
Yeah.
And then seeing it used for entertainment. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I can't talk because I'm white. And yeah. I'm white, male, middle class.
Yes.
I mean, I think Ben Foles said it right. You don't know what it's like being white, middle, white, middle class.
No, middle class. Yeah. White.
Because, yeah. We got tough. But no, some of my customers have done the imagery like this, and every time I see it, it offends me.
Right. Okay. Well, that's fair enough.
But I don't know anyone who's offended by it. Right. I don't know any First Peoples who go to me, oh, gee, Glenn, I hate this stuff. And it just doesn't sit right with me.
Okay, fair enough.
But I don't know if I've got a strong enough argument. I just know it offends me. And this is, which is what's interesting about the article. And it's written by a person who is offended, who is a First Peoples
right.
person.
Yep.
So it gets even more confusing, doesn't it? Yeah. And remember where the whole name Indian came from in the first place.
Wasn't it because somebody misidentified them as having been from India when they weren't?
No, it was when Christopher Columbus arrived. He was sailing to India.
Right.
Got lost, arrived in America and goes, oh, Indians.
Right, okay. Yeah,
He thought he was in another country looking at other people's.
Yeah, right. Imagine
your entire identity is based on, oh, I was confused.
A case of mistaken identity, yeah.
It's like walking up to the Australian Aboriginals, which I'm also offended by the name Aboriginals, for, you know, we're the only people living on their own original country,
yep.
Once again, First Peoples, the country, who haven't even got a name that's just Aboriginal, which means live there, basically. So it's even, but it's like walking up to the Aboriginal, oh, the Chinese.
Right.
Yeah, we're in China. These are the Chinese. And I'm still calling them Chinese.
Yeah, right.
Would that not scream ludicrous?
Yes. Yeah. Particularly if you'd been doing it for 600 years, yes.
Do not the people in India go, say what now?
Yeah. I don't know. Yeah.
I just think, yeah, whenever you, I'm not even sure if I even want to talk about it, yeah. But my point, I guess, of bringing it up is when you come up with these ideas for photo shoots.
Right.
At least try and look at it from a couple of different perspectives and say,
is anyone going to be upset by this?
No, but maybe what's my real motive for this outfit?
Yeah.
Yeah, what's my motivation to want to take whatever it may be and put it in this place? Yeah, what's my reasoning?
Yeah.
And if the reasoning's only to go, even go, oh, look at this, well, maybe that's not the right thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
So anyway,
okay.
That's one. No, that's number two because the ebook's number one.
Right. Yeah,
that's actually, some people might think the ebook's number two as well. No, but the thing that I've not looked at the article because I only found it about 3 seconds before coming online.
Yeah.
Now I saw earlier in the year Canon was showcasing all these bizarro digital cameras.
Right. Okay.
They were kind of, you know, car makers do with cars. They do the futuristic style car.
Oh, okay, yep.
Yeah, but so they've decided, they've gone on to Indiegogo to try and launch one of these cameras. So a camera company
I'm sorry, excuse me, hang on, don't bury the lead. You're telling me Canon, as a company, has gone on Indiegogo?
To crowdfund the camera, yep.
Oh, please. Talk about jumping the shark.
But here's the thing, though.
Yeah.
If you've got prototypes, that's the thing. If you've got 3 or 4 different prototypes, you have no idea if there's a want for them, a desire for them, if it's punching people's buttons. Why go to the effort of making the damn thing and finding no one wants it?
No, you do what's called market research.
This is exactly what they're doing. They're not Indiegogo.
Yes, but they're asking people to cough up money for it.
Remember, you only cough up money if it goes ahead.
Yeah, right.
It's true. Now, Indiegogo, you don't pay until the thing actually becomes a reality.
Yeah.
I thought, yeah, look, I mean, at the same time, I'm going, they're doing what now? And they're going, oh, yeah, I can see the slyness in what they're doing. But apparently it's nothing more than a landing page at the moment where you can receive more information on camera and updates when the campaign will go live.
Okay, so tell us about the camera. What is it?
I don't know anything about the camera.
Right.
So it's a little clip-on camera. It's a little, like if you had like a backpack with those little D rings.
Oh, okay, like a D shackle. Yeah.
Yeah, you're just going to clip the camera It's a little point and shoot, basically.
Right.
So, you know what? If they could make this and make phone calls, I reckon it'd probably be really popular.
Quite possibly.
Yeah. So basically, they're taking on the phone market with a cute little point and press.
Yeah, right.
Anyway, so that's it for me.
That's it for you. And Adam also submitted that story. So
don't give him any kudos.
Thank you, Adam. And we'll do the rest of Adam's stuff while we're here. Icelanders, we've had enough of Instagrammers destroying our nature. So, this is a post on DIYphotography.net, which I've not had a chance to read. I haven't had a chance to look at anything this week because we're recording on a Tuesday, and so I've just grabbed all of the stories and haven't even looked at them. So I'm assuming that Icelanders are upset with Instagrammers.
I'd be upset if I was an Icelander band, not being able to go anywhere without, like, you can't go for a walk down the beaches without 400 photographers being on them.
Yeah, right.
I mean, it's good. But I don't, the example picture they use, I don't see anyone doing anything offensive to the nature. It's a waterfall shot.
The one thing I was going to say about that was that I was on Instagram a couple of days ago and saw an image from Iceland that someone had taken with somebody in the frame standing underneath one of the waterfalls and somebody commenting and saying that person is not meant to be standing there. That's a protected area.
Yeah. Yeah, and there's stuff like this guy about driving off-road into protected geothermal areas.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you can imagine there's idiots everywhere.
Yep.
I don't blame them for it. But it's exactly the sort of behavior, as we well know, that ends up ruining places because then they get to have all these laws or car parks and approved stairs with the right kind of things to step on and the right sized handrail and no going beyond this zone because that rock down there someone slipped on it once.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's
so now become, nobody can go there, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. It's become a nightmare, so.
Yeah. The next one was from Petapixel, from Adam. This is, this volcano eruption was shot from space with a Nikon D5. I don't know why we need to know that it was a Nikon D5, but anyway.
Exactly the same thing.
Yeah, exactly. So, but it's an interesting image, seeing a...
Cool shot. Cool shot.
Yeah, volcanic eruption from above the clouds, which is...
It's like anything in the world of photography these days, though, is you've got to go, yeah, kind of
it's right all about out getting a unique angle, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean... If we've got to go to space to start making this stuff happen,
bloody NASA—they're spoiling it for everybody.
What kind of lens do I need to do a portrait from space?
Yeah, exactly.
And I'm in my wireless trigger for my flash. I need some serious coverage. Yes. I have to have like a bit of fishing line going dangling down like for 60 kilometers with a repeater every 400 meters or something.
Yeah. That's it. Crazy.
I'm not sure it's worth it.
The next one, also from Petapixel, these photos ended child labor in the US. And this is there's a video link which I haven't had a chance to look at, and a bunch of images of children being used as, you know, child labor, basically, from the early 1900s. I don't know when child labor was abolished, but...
1978, so it took a while.
Right. nicely done.
I've got child labor here at house. That only means we had kids.
Yeah.
That only means we had kids.
That's right. Adam's next one is, the Photon is a product photography light tent updated for the 21st century. This thing looks like, an endless seamless backdrop that's only 12 inches wide with three light panels, two on the sides, one over the top, and it looks like, have you had a look at this?
Yeah.
Oh, tell us all about it.
It's a light tent.
Oh, okay.
Two of the sides are their own lights, or then the roof is its own light.
Right, so you don't, it's not like diffusers that you throw light through, they're actually light panels.
That's actually the light panels. So you can dial up however many or how little or whatever pattern of lighting you want.
Yeah, nice.
So you can have like backlighting. Yeah, you can. So imagine the panel is divided up into like 20 little squares.
Oh, okay.
So you could let's say 25 squares. It's 5 by 5.
Yep.
Block. You could just get the third five vertical.
Ah.
ones that in the 20 closest he turned off.
Gives you
different lighting. So it's a great idea. It's just so small that obviously its application is
yes, you're not going to be shooting very large objects.
Yeah, if you're an eBay seller,
yep,
yeah, that stuff, but yeah. How much does the thing cost, and is it worth? People are doing it quite well with just a cardboard box.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
I mean, we're not a lot of people looking for art out of their light tent type stuff, but
yeah,
you know,
yeah,
I'm sure there's a market for it
for sure.
But if it's small, it'd be expensive.
The last one from Adam from F-Stoppers. F-Stoppers interviews Jim Olive, the Texas photographer whose copyrighted image was stolen by the University of Houston. Ouch. That has to hurt the university, surely.
Well, it depends if they've got outsourced their web page. Probably doesn't affect the university at all. It affects the So did you actually read anything about it at all?
No, Olive discovered that the University of Houston's C.T. Bauer College of Business was using the image, an aerial view of the Houston skyline shot from a helicopter, without his permission. As far as he could tell, the university had been using the image for approximately 4 years. They had removed his watermark from the image and had even gone so far as stripping the metadata. It's willful at that point, says Olive, of the blatant misappropriation of his image by the university. Well, I've got to agree with that. If they've gone and deliberately stripped the metadata out of the image, which obviously would then make it more difficult to track, you know, illegal usage via these services that, you know, are online that, you know, will track your images. You know, so they were obviously trying to avoid that.
Yeah, I mean, once again, this is where the world is fraught with danger online. You don't know if someone else has got the image, stripped it of watermark and metadata, mm-hmm. then put it onto an image stock library for free. Where's the source? Where did they source the image from?
Yeah.
Were they the culprits or was somebody else? And they're just, he's tried to contact them multiple times and they haven't bothered replying.
Yep.
But is he contacting the right people? Yeah, it's I'd love to know the outcome of it all became though.
Olive filed in state district court claiming that what UH had done by using his image was unlawful taking. Unlawful taking or simply taking is a rule which prevents government entities from taking your property without sufficiently compensating you for it. It's a law normally cited when the government wants to take things like part of your farm to build a new highway. Olive's takings case...
It's a powerful lot of home.
Yeah, right. It was not entirely without precedence. Yeah, that's a bit of an Australian reference there for our foreign listeners. Go look for a movie called The Castle. Another well-known Texas photographer, David Langford, first pursued a takings case against the state of Texas when one of his images appeared on Texas motor vehicle inspection stickers in certain counties. It seems a convict in the prison system took the image from a magazine and used it to create a design which was printed on 4.5 million of the stickers. Oh, jeez. At this point, he's unsure how much further he'll go. Six different groups with an interest in protecting copyright have reached out to help with the case by working together on a brief that represents the interests of many thousands of photographers and other creatives. We definitely have not heard the last of Olive or of this case. So obviously there is no resolution at this point in time.
Well, he sued him for he sent him a bill for $41,000, and yep. They offered him two and a half, which I thought was fair use. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, so thank you for those stories, Adam. The third one that I've got on my list is
the third ones of yours.
Yes, is Andrew S. Gray dot photography. This is a guy whose work I came across through the week. I can't remember if I saw this on Instagram or if it popped up in my Facebook feed, but this guy is based in Northumberland in the UK, and he considers himself a landscape photographer, but he has a very interesting technique, and you kind of need to watch. Oh, it was a YouTube video. That's right, because it was another photographer who had got in touch with Andrew S. Gray, and the pair of them went out for a shoot, and this guy whose video channel it was on YouTube, he wanted to see how Andrew Gray shot his images, and so he was trying to pick up this technique. And basically what Andrew Gray has done is made an entire portfolio of these landscape images where he'll occasionally use an ND filter if there's too much light around, because generally he's looking for something around a half to three quarters of a second shutter speeds, and he's not using a tripod, and he's doing this intentional flick of the wrist. So he ends up with these images that have just enough detail for you to make out things like trees and buildings and whatever, but there's this intentional camera movement in all of these images. And he processes them with quite an intentional red, orange, yellow color palette, which could be a little bit of white balance manipulation, or it could just be straight color manipulation at the post-processing.
He's got his own Nick Analog Effects Pro 2 presets that he uses. So he's built up his own style.
It's a really interesting style of photography, and not something that I'd seen before. Yeah, and I quite liked it as well. And I thought, I'll just throw that in the podcast.
Nice,
yes, something different. Another one that I came across, this was on Petapixel, and this is all about a guy who has made it his almost his life's work to go to famous landmarks and take photos looking in the wrong, quote-unquote, direction. So he's travelled around to places like the Taj Mahal, and instead of taking the image that everybody sees, you know, looking down the the ponds towards the Taj Mahal, he's turned around 180 degrees and shot looking the other way. And that's an interesting collection of images. Some of them you kind of have an idea from the minute you see it where it might be, and then there are some that you just go, well, that could be anywhere. But I thought, that's something different. That's something different.
It's a good idea.
Yeah.
It reminds me of like when you go and into an elevator and you face the wrong way.
Do you do that?
Oh, yeah. And it's really disconcerting to people. Yeah. So if you do that in your photography, it's going to...
Do you stand near the door, or do you stand right at the back of the elevator facing the wall?
Right in the middle of the door, right with the two doors closed, looking at everybody.
And then you go, thanks for joining me on short notice.
Yes, on the third floor, ladies' underwear. It's kind of a fun thing to do. Yeah. So.
And the last one that I've got here, which was the first thing that I found today, is a rumour that Sigma is about to launch four new FE lenses for Sony E-mount, a 35mm f1.2, a 45mm f2.8, a 12-24 2.8, and a 24-70 2.8. And out of all of those, I've got to say, the 12-24 2.8 actually sounds pretty damn exciting.
It does, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It's a good lens.
Yeah. So, but in the process of looking at that, I noticed that they said, what a superb week. We just got the Tamron 17-28 FE.
Yeah. That came out this week.
It came out this week, did it?
Yeah.
Okay, I wasn't sure if it was announced or if it was actually released.
Well, it's oot in the boot. Right. Hard to find, but right. Oot in the boot. Yeah,
right. Which would also be a pretty good lens, I would imagine.
I think they've only got them in Nikon mount at the moment. And
But it's FE. The Tamron is FE. What?
It's a joke.
Oh. Okay. So anyway.
I do amuse myself sometimes.
That's good.
It's like my dad joke of the day, because it's school holidays and doing dad jokes. And people didn't get it today.
Oh, I didn't see today.
That's what made it even the most best.
Oh, okay.
Because people didn't get it.
What was today's?
I was driving down the road, and there's a magician in the car in front of me.
Oh, yes, I did.
I knew he was a magician because he turned into a side street.
Yes.
And people looked straight over there. I loved it. It was like, oh, it's gold.
Gold, gold, gold for lavender.
Love that, yes.
Excellent. Well, I think
have we got a special guest?
We will have a special guest. I've yet to record that interview, but we're about to cut to it.
Are you pretending that we've already done it?
No, I'm not pretending. As people know, we're recording this on Tuesday night, and I said last week that we weren't recording with Aaron until Friday night, so there's no sense trying to make out that we...
He was good, though, wasn't he?
He was fantastic.
Very interesting.
Sensational.
Stuff. He's convinced me.
Excellent.
Aaron.
Aaron Nace, welcome to Shutters Inc.
Thank you so much. It's great to be here.
Excellent, mate. So it's Saturday morning here in Australia. What time is it where you are?
It's 6 o'clock p.m. and I'm in Chicago, Illinois, in the United States.
Oh, fantastic! The Windy City, isn't it? Isn't that what they call it?
Oh yeah, it is the Windy City. You know, and I always thought it was because of the weather, and it actually is pretty windy here. But apparently, it gets its nickname from politicians. You know, a lot of being on the windy side. So right. We've got our history of, you know, that sort of politics as well as the weather.
Right, right. I gather that that is a malady not unique to Chicago somehow.
I don't think so.
Yeah. Well, mate, great to have you along. So you thought you were going to be an engineer and designer of furniture or automotive products, and you somehow ended up in photography. Tell us that story.
Yeah, for sure. So I've always been a visual person. Ever since I was a little kid, I was drawing and, you know, setting up action figures and, you know, like making up scenes in my own head. And I even painted my parents. I don't know why they let me do it, but they let me actually paint my entire room. So I painted this scene with, like, you know, people in space and, like, you know, like kind of like a Star Wars type scene on the walls of my bedroom when I was, you know, right, like 5 or 6 years old. And, you know, so they've been really supportive along the way. So I've always been a visual person. When it came time to university, I was really into trying to break things apart and figure out how things worked. And the idea of designing products was very interesting to me. I was like, okay, cool. There are some products out there that I'm really interested in, both visually and functionally. And I want to see what I can do here to maybe improve upon those. And so my background is actually in industrial design. And after graduating, I took a little bit of time to travel and fell in love with photography just on a, as a happenstance sort of thing. It just kind of happened. You know, I was taking pictures. I was in South America for almost a year and just taking pictures, you know, as much as I could possibly shoot. And when I got back, I was like, man, I mean, I still love design, but like photography has totally taken a hold of me. And that's when I knew that was going to be my career, my passion, what the thing that would drive me as an artist and drive my career as, you know, up until now, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah, nice. So what type of photography initially, you know, sparked an interest? Was it travel? Was it people photography while traveling, or was it landscape stuff, or what was it?
Yeah. So when I was traveling, it's kind of like everything, right? Like, you know, when you travel, your eyes are kind of like really big and you kind of absorb everything and everything looks interesting, right? Because you're just in a new place. And it's like, wow, this street sign is beautiful, you know, but if you live there, it's like just another street sign.
Yeah.
So kind of anything and everything. And when I got back home, I started a project. It was called a 365 day self-portrait project, in which I took a self-portrait image every single day for a year and posted it online for feedback.
Wow.
And that project, you know, just really, really drove my creativity to try to make interesting images every single day. And I also just got a lot of practice both behind the camera and in front of the camera.
That's a big commitment, 365 days. Wow.
It pretty much took over my life for a year. Yeah, by the end of it, I was like, all right, no one needs to see another picture of me ever again. Like, there's enough.
I'd imagine that the first week would have been pretty easy, but after you've done, you know, 5 or 10, you'd then be starting to think, okay, what do I do now to make it different? Was that pretty much the mindset?
Exactly. And that's where Photoshop came into the mix as well. So
right.
I had worked in Photoshop as a designer, but, you know, with this project, I realized I've got to make these images interesting. You know, I'm posting them online for feedback, and I want to, you know, I want to create a new piece of art every single day. And I was doing this on a limited budget. I had a full-time job at the time. And, you know, I relied on Photoshop to make my images interesting. So it was growing my passion as a photographer, but also pushing the boundaries of what I could do in Photoshop at the same time.
Yeah, right. Wow. And so somewhere along the line, you decided to start Flern. What triggered that?
So, yeah, along the way, I was posting my images online, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, new picture every single day, every single day. And I started getting messages. This was on Flickr.com back in 2008.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's been a little bit, but the response from the community was awesome. Like I really built like such a cool connection with other people who were doing the same project and just a community in general, and started getting these messages, you know, people interested in education. Like, hey, I saw this image you posted. I thought it was really cool. I kind of want to do something similar. Will you teach me how to do it? And like, sure, of course, I'll teach you. Yeah, come on, let's do it. So, you know, in the beginning, it was just like, yeah, one-on-one sessions. We were using like Skype and screen sharing and, you know, just kind of like, you know, kind of like engaging with the community. And I realized that there was a market for this. And I kind of looked around the internet and there were a few sites that were teaching, you know, Photoshop at the time, but nothing really in the style that like I wanted to learn. I was like, man, I wish there were tutorials, you know, like doing the stuff like I wanted to do. And that's really what started Flern, was, you know, just like a desire to like share education and, you know, spread this type of knowledge with anyone around the world. So since day one, we've been dedicated to releasing free tutorials on YouTube. And now we have a subscription service on Flern.com as well. So we still produce every single week. We produce a free tutorial on YouTube. So that's just YouTube. You just type in Flern. That's Phlearn, like PH learn. Mm-hmm. And you'll see we've got hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of free tutorials on YouTube. So it's just been a fantastic opportunity to kind of like spread a passion and, you know, help educate other people out there. And, you know, from that, it's just the community, like, that, you know, I've kind of like been lucky to become a part of. It's just become really, really wonderful. I think we have just one of the most supportive communities out there for artists and creatives. And I'm super happy to be happy to be a part of it.
That's awesome. I was looking at your YouTube just a few minutes before we started recording. I see, you know, you're currently at something like 1.7 million subscribers, which is just awesome. So you know, well done. Obviously, whatever you started there certainly hit a nerve, as you said. You know, people just wanted to learn, and you brought what they needed, and that's great.
Yeah, I was kind of like just thinking about like what I wanted, you know, as a creative, you know, like, okay, cool, I want to create great images. Like, you know, let's teach things that, you know, personally I would be like super interested in, and as well as all kinds of basics too, because, you know, you need somewhere to get started, especially in a field as broad as photography and in a program that is, you know, so comprehensive as Photoshop is. You know, you kind of need the basics to get started. So we've been providing those for almost 10 years now.
That's a really good point, that, you know, you can get to a point where you yourself might be really competent with a piece of software, but you do need to bear in mind that at every, you know, turn of the calendar, there are people who are coming to that program fresh, who've never seen it, who've never edited an image, and who have no idea of the basics that you now take for granted because you've been doing it for 10 years or 15 years or 20 years or whatever. So that's a really good point, that, you know, you can't just assume that all of your, you know, listeners / viewers / subscribers are necessarily at the same point you're at.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, with a program that's as comprehensive as Photoshop, you know, you open it up for the first time and you're like, what do I do with this? You know, it's like there's so many menus, so many tools, so many features. It can be overwhelming. And we've worked to really simplify that process down. So, you know, when it comes to like, hey, these are the primary things that, you know, as a beginner, just start here. Like, this is a great place to start. And we have, like I said, hundreds and hundreds of free tutorials on YouTube as well as on our website, and that's flern.com as well. And then we have a subscription service on our website as well. It's kind of like Netflix for creatives. You just, you know, it's like subscription and you get everything. Nice. And we just released a fantastic tutorial called The Beginner's Guide to Photoshop, which is literally that. It's like, if you've never used Photoshop in your life, like hit play. And by the time you're done with this tutorial, like you're going to be good at Photoshop.
Yeah. Nice. Nice. And I would imagine that that type of tutorial, you're probably going to need to refresh every couple of years because, you know, Adobe's always introducing new things to Photoshop and Lightroom. And so all of these beginner's guides, the goalposts are always shifting to a certain degree.
Yeah, most definitely. And it depends on how much of a difference these programs make during the years. But what we'll do often is release updates. So, you know, because this is a subscription platform, it's, you know, you pay a monthly fee and you get access to everything. So
yeah,
even if you watched a tutorial of ours, you know, 5 years ago on the basics of Photoshop, you know, you come and watch it today and it's updated with all of the new features that newer versions of Photoshop have. And when it comes time, we will completely record the tutorial with the new features. And we do that every couple of years as well.
Yeah, nice. Nice. So I put the question out to Shutters Inc. listeners a week or two back via our Facebook page and said, you know, we're going to have Aaron on for a chat. What sort of things would you like us to ask him? And a few people came back with some questions, and one of them was Brendan Reaney, who said, I'd suggest asking about luminosity masks. Now, I'm interested to know, does either Lightroom or, well, I know Photoshop does, but does Lightroom do luminosity masks yet? I haven't used Lightroom now for about 3 years, and I know it didn't do it the last time I looked at it, but has that something that's come to Lightroom in those 3 years?
Not in the same way that Photoshop can do it. Lightroom does actually have some great tools around what's known as range masking. So let's say you want to just darken your highlights or brighten your shadows. Well, you can adjust sliders in Lightroom and then use range masking to really fine tune where you're actually going to be affecting. So you can say brighten, and then with range masking, you can say, but only have this be brighten in the shadows. Now, true luminosity masking is done in Photoshop, and you have a lot of control here. And for those of you who've never heard of luminosity, I know it's like this big, like, what the heck is luminosity masking? Basically, the idea is you can take multiple different exposures. So, you know, what you would typically get for an HDR, where you take one image that's darker, one image that's properly exposed, and one image that's lighter, and you combine them together. And the reason you would want to do this is because cameras are really, they're fantastic, but they're not so great at capturing really bright highlights and really dark shadows at the same time. That's why we'll often see, like, you take a picture of the person, but the sky looks completely white, you know, or your shadows are just way too dark. And that has to do with the dynamic range of cameras. So thankfully in Photoshop, you can overcome this. So you can take a variety of different exposures, or even, and this is where I think luminosity masking is so cool, you can even process the same raw image multiple times at different exposures. So you can do this with one image and then combine multiple different exposures together. So instead of getting the person, you know, looking good, but the sky is like completely white, instead of getting that, you're going to get the person's going to look great, the sky is going to look great, even the shadows are going to look great. So it's all that can be done with luminosity masking. And we have a tutorial on it on flern.com. So if you just go to flern.com, type in luminosity masking, we have some fantastic examples using a like beautiful, beautiful landscape photos taken by a friend of mine, Joshua Cripps, who's a wonderful landscape photographer. And the same technique can be done with people as well.
Yeah, nice, nice. David Marland asked, what is the most asked for post-processing technique? So I'm assuming you hear from your followers and your supporters all of the time. What's the thing that they ask for the most?
So everyone's into retouching. You know, it's a huge, huge part of the industry, right? Because sure, most professional images that, you know, images that you see in magazines and advertisements on billboards, almost every single image you see nowadays has been retouched. You know, objects that are like a little bit distracting have been removed. The colors have been enhanced. If there are people in the image, their skin has been enhanced. It's a really, really big part of the post-production industry. So a lot of those questions around retouching and kind of the hot topic these days is a technique called frequency separation retouching.
Yep.
And I mean, personally, I love this technique. I think it's incredibly powerful. And we found so many people are asking to learn it as well. And the cool thing that, you know, that we've been able to do is really just tap into like, okay, what do people want to learn? And then how do we make the like the easiest, best way to teach them that? So it's actually super cool. On Flurm.com, we have an action, a Photoshop action. And Photoshop action is basically like a set of pre-recorded steps where like we do all the work and then you just download it and you hit the play button and it just does it for you, which is like fantastic.
Yep.
So we actually have a frequency separation action on Flurm that you can just get that individually, or it comes with our frequency separation tutorial. And you just hit play on the action and then I just show you how to use it. And you can get like amazing, amazing retouching results through using this action. And then like literally the brush tool, it's like this crazy process that you would think would be so complicated. But if you know how to use the brush tool, you can do like really next level retouching.
Yeah.
And yeah, again, I know it sounds super complicated and obviously I can't show you how to do this over this podcast. I wish I could. But we have a tutorial. It's called How to Master Frequency Separation Retouching, and that's on Flurm.com. Sorry to keep like plugging this stuff. I'm just
That's fine.
I want to show you how to do it, but this is you got to watch the tutorial because it's much easier to learn when it's a video.
It's funny that you should mention frequency separation as we were talking before we started recording. I'm doing a series of tutorials on YouTube for Darktable, which is a similar program to Lightroom in the way that it's laid out and what it aims to do in both, you know, library management as well as raw development. And the team that develops Darktable works pretty much throughout each year, and then they release a stable release right at Christmas time each year. And when the current version came out last Christmas at the end of 2018, one of the new tools was a retouch tool which uses frequency separation. And I'd heard the phrase but wasn't overly familiar with the process. And you know, and what it does is allow you to define different levels of detail for the retouch tool so that you can really hone in on, you know, the, you know, blemishes on skin or whatever it is that you want to retouch. And it is an amazing tool, but it is quite complicated to get your head around when you first come to it. But So we spoke about luminosity masks and HDR, and David said, you know, what other fashions or trends in post-processing do you imagine will come next?
Things are moving towards mobile. Like as we see in the photography world, you know, the idea of taking professional photos with your phone, even a few years ago was like, I don't think so. These days that's totally changed. There are working photographers out there working primarily from their phones. And we actually just partnered with a fantastic photographer. Her name is Elise Swopes. She is just an amazing creative. If you guys you know, are on Instagram, you should definitely check her out. It's just at Swopes, S-W-O-P-E-S. She does some incredible work and it's all shot and edited on her phone.
Wow.
Which is like mind-blowing. So not only is, you know, smartphone photography becoming, you know, in the mainstream and a commercially viable way of, you know, pushing the art form in a new direction, but also editing. And we're talking about compositing and retouching and doing some really complicated stuff all from your mobile device. And if you're interested, we actually released a couple free tutorials with Elise on our YouTube channel. So I highly recommend checking that out. And then we have a pro tutorial available on our website with her as well. So she goes through different apps and shows you basically how to just create these stunning composite images with your phone, which like to me, like I'm an old school Photoshop user, right? So I'm like, you know, I'm like, yeah, Photoshop all the way, big desktop computer, like technology, technology, technology. Like, you know, give me the biggest, hard drive, give me the biggest monitor. Like that's my jam. But she's like pushing forward and like really being one of those, you know, pioneers in this industry of like, no, let's strip it all down. Let's just do it all on our phone. And she's killing it. I mean, her client list speaks for itself.
And did you say she's doing composite images on mobile?
Yes, yes.
So she's not just like, touching up a single image. She's actually compositing multiple images together on a mobile device.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Wow. Incredible stuff. She's doing cinemagraphs on her mobile device. I mean, like, yeah, you got to check her word out. It's like, what? You're doing that on your phone? So that's why I was so excited, because she's a Chicago native too. And, you know, I live in Chicago. So I was like, well, we got to bring you in. Like, please, will you share your gifts with the world? And she was like, heck yeah. So, yeah, we just released a fantastic tutorial with her. And it's like, it's just blowing my mind, you know, like as technology develops, new art forms are going to go with it. And, you know, like my goal as a creative and as an educator is like, let's stay on top of this. You know, let's like, you know, people are unaware that you can do all this cool stuff on your phone. Like, let's spread that, you know, like let's share that with the world and, you know, let everyone see like, hey, this is a legit platform. You don't need to spend thousands and thousands of dollars on a computer and software and a big fancy camera. Like you can get great results with literally just your phone.
Yeah, right. It's a brave new world, isn't it?
It's nuts. Yeah, totally nuts. And I feel like, you know, so I'm like, I came into the photography game what I would consider relatively late, right? Like my first jump into the photography world was in 2008, and digital cameras were like already live and kicking at the time. So, you know, in my own history, I was never a film photographer. So I feel like I'm a newbie in the terms of photography in general, because like a lot of my friends are like, they've been shooting back in the days of film and they were commercial photographers shooting on film. And I'm like, man, I missed that completely. And so for me to just feel like I'm such like a young newbie in this industry, I mean, I've been doing it, you know, professionally for a long time, but like in the large scheme of things, like I'm still so new. And you know, now we see this new wave of like mobile photographers and they're just blowing me away. So it just shows that as technology progresses, you know, artists are going to find a way to use new technologies to really push the art form forward.
Yeah, definitely. And I think, you know, that whole thing about feeling like a newbie and coming to the game late, I think that is all just a reflection of how old you are at any given moment, because I think the longer you stay in any given industry, you know, I mean, I started out as an audio engineer as a 19-year-old in the mid-80s, and I thought at the time that, you know, what do I know? I'm a newbie, you know, and I, you know, now 30-plus years down the track, people look to me for advice, you know, when it comes to audio stuff, because I've just been doing it for so damn long that it's second nature. And I think, you know, that sort of plays into it. You know, you might feel like a newbie because you started after the film days had come and gone, but there will come a point where people will turn to Aaron and go, he knows all about this stuff that I'm totally new at. You know what I mean?
It's nuts, right? It just, yeah, technology progresses at such a fast rate. It's like, exactly. You know, that's like a big part of my goal as, you know, as a person who's like, my primary goal in business is to bring the best education I possibly can to our students. And a big part of that is like, I'm also an artist. So like, you know, my background is in, you know, design and art and photography. So like, I'm first and foremost an artist. And then I just like happen to have a business along the way. But, you know, one of my biggest goals is like introducing like new young artists to the world. Like, you know, there are so many people out there just doing incredibly incredible stuff. And, you know, maybe they don't have like, you know, 30 plus years and like a crazy giant client list or whatever, but they're like, they're doing really interesting things.
Yeah.
And like, I feel like what I want to do is like help put these people on a pedestal. Like if I can play any type of like a small role in the advancement of of these individuals are, or any individual who learns from them, you know, that is just like such a cool spot to be in, because totally. I started off as an artist and, you know, it's tough to make it as an artist. So like, you know, I want to just be here to be like, okay, cool. Let's find those diamonds in the rough. Like, let's find these gems and like do what we can to like put them up on a pedestal and see like, here, world, look at this amazing person. They're creating this great art and they're going to show you how to do it. You know, maybe you never thought you could edit on your phone, but look, you can do it. So it's so cool.
Absolutely. You know, the way you are describing that makes me think of Henry Ford, who, you know, he basically took the attitude of he wanted to hire people that were smarter than him, you know, and it's kind of a similar thing as to what you're doing is, you know, as you say, you find these young people who are just exploring what technology is capable of, who are just doing things that you and I would never even think to attempt, and they're just making it a reality. And it's great to be able to share that with the, you know, the people who are already following what you do. And yeah, that's awesome. Well done, man.
Thanks. It's so much fun. Yeah, it's
totally. What,
you know, we spent the last 10 years like making tutorials and learning how to make tutorials. So at this point, it's like, you know, let's share that knowledge with like how to make a great tutorial. Let's share that and bring other people on the platform and they can share their gifts. And then we can basically just take care of all the hard stuff. It's really, really cool.
Yeah. One other question that came in from Di Bell was about library management. Now, I personally, I'm really fussy when it comes to, you know, my photos. I'll come back from a shoot and I'm absolutely fastidious about tagging every person that I know the name of within photos and, you know, and I'll tag keywords that I think are relevant. What's your approach to that, Aaron?
Yeah, so I do all of my organization in Lightroom primarily, and I find it does a great job. So when I'm done with a photo shoot, basically I import through Lightroom and I have the file set up to organize by date. So every photo shoot gets, you know, cataloged in a folder on my computer by date. And I also append the name of the photo shoot on there to make it easily, you know, you can find it easily. In terms of adding keywords, I don't always add keywords. I find that if I do, you know, if I do a good job with just like general metadata tags, like I make sure that, you know, of course you want to put your copyright information, all that sort of thing like that. But as long as I've got everything organized by date and I keep the name of the photo shoot, and if I need to, I'll use subfolders to put like, you know, if I have a multiple day photo shoot, I'll use subfolders to do that. That format has worked really well for me. I'm usually pretty quickly able to find the images that I want. And then, of course, I'll use star ratings and color ratings in Lightroom to, you know, to choose my favorites. So I'll be able to find the date super easily. And then when it comes to my favorites, I'll be able to find those as well.
Yeah, nice. Nice. It's interesting when you talk to different photographers because everyone has a different workflow with that stuff, you know, and it's I'm always keen to hear how other people do it because you just never know when you're going to pick up some little gem and you go, oh, that's something I hadn't considered. You know, I must admit, I use colors different to the way I use star ratings. You know, I'll use star ratings to sort of identify to myself what I think are the best images from a shoot, but I use my color ratings to signify which ones the client has come back and said are the images that they're interested in pursuing. And so I sort of mentally examine, you know, which ones have been assigned a color rating, you know, a color tag, and which ones are the ones that I star rated. It kind of helps me to narrow in where me and the client are on the same page, you know, things like that.
Yeah, that's great. I actually would have never thought to do that. So cool. I'm learning something too.
Awesome. Awesome. I got another question from Di Bell. I'm not sure that we can really answer this, but anyway, we'll run with it and see where we go. How would you make a photograph that was shot at noon look like sunset in Photoshop?
Man. You know, like personally, I would just go out and take another picture.
Yeah, I'm with you.
It's a very difficult thing to do because, you know, the light is completely different. Not only is the color completely different, but also the direction of the light. And color you can change. You can make an image warmer and cooler with your white balance, no problem. But changing the direction of light is super, super difficult to do. So yeah. I've run into this in the past where, like, I've been on a photo shoot with a client and, you know, I'll come back and say, like, ooh, you know what? This isn't exactly what I was going for. I'll just do a reshoot. And, you know, if it's a reshoot because it's my fault, I won't charge the client. And I'll just say, like, hey, this will be on my bill. And, you know, I know we can do something a little bit better than this. It doesn't happen much. You know, as experience goes on, you realize, yeah. Oh, you know what? I actually do need to do this at sunset. I can't, you know, like, so that can happen sometimes as well. And a reshoot, like, the idea of it kind of sucks. Like, damn, I already just did this. Why you really? I should do this again. But every time I do a reshoot, it always comes out better the second time because I'm more planned. I know more what I want, and it usually takes less time to get a better result as well.
Yeah, and I think on those occasions where you've had to suck it up and bear it yourself and go, I really didn't do the best by the client. I'm going to have to go out and reshoot this. That whole experience does wonders for laying down the mental checklist in your mind so that the next time you're out on a shoot, you've probably already troubleshot a lot of those things before you've even gone out on the shoot so that you nail it the first time so that you don't have to go out and do reshoots all of the time.
Exactly. And whenever I'm working with clients, I would say like the first half of our relationship is just me asking them questions, like as much information I can get from my clients. And I'm also going to make sure that we're on the same page visually, because I work with a lot of people who, you know, they have an idea of what they want in their head, but it can be difficult to express it, especially if you're not in the industry. And so, you know, we'll start off, I'll say, okay, I think I know what you want, but let me find some images that might be similar to what I think you want. And why don't you find some images that are similar as well? And then we'll kind of discuss, like, okay, this image, what do you like about it? Do you like the lighting? Do you like the pose? Do you like what these people are doing? Do you like that it's telling a story? Like, do you like the clothing? Like, what about this photo do you like? And they'll be like, oh, I like the lighting. So I'm like, great, we'll shoot at sunrise. Easy, done. Yeah. And then this other photo, what do you like about that? Oh, I like the clothing. And I'm like, cool, we'll get a clothing stylist and make sure it looks like this. So, you know, that can really, really help make you a better communicator and better able to deliver something to the client that you know they're going to like. Like from the beginning, they've already told you, hey, I want it to be shot at sunrise. I want, you know, a professional wardrobe like stylist. I want these type of models or these type of subjects, like without realizing that they've basically helped you art direct the job. And then so you can get out there, just deliver something that they're going to love.
I love the fact that you said the first half of the relationship is all about asking questions, because I absolutely agree with that 110%. I do not believe you can ask too many questions before, you know, picking the camera up. I think, you know, managing expectations and setting some goals before you get to the shoot is some of the best preparation work you can possibly do.
Yeah, I completely agree. And just, you know, getting the experience of asking questions, it might help you to answer some of those questions that maybe you didn't even think you needed to ask, right? Like, oh, should I have a contract in place before we get started? Like, you know, all these things that you might look over during like your excitement of just like, oh, I got a client, let's just get this done. You know, by sitting down and I'll create a list of question after question after question and just run through with the client. And, you know, like I'm going to learn a lot about what they want during that process.
That's fantastic. Now, I noticed there's a link there that says magazine. Is that like a newsletter or is it just a blog that you read on the website or how does that work?
Yeah. So we have, thank you for mentioning it because we built a magazine to feature creatives from around the world. So at the moment, it's a digital magazine. We don't have anything in print yet, but we have interviews with some of the top photographers around the world. We have a section called In Your Bag, where we'll take like a, you know, accomplished landscape photographer and ask them, what's in your bag? Like, what camera, what lenses are you using? Like, what's the deal here? And then we also have some fantastic guides, like how to master SEO as a photographer in 2019, you know, things that we really feel that creatives need to know. And we work with a team of fantastic writers. We have a wonderful magazine editor, and we're constantly producing articles and trying to create content that's just going to help move the creative industry forward.
Nice. Well, Aaron, it has been an absolute pleasure to have you on the podcast. The website, in case you haven't heard it already, is FLEARN, P-H as in photography, and learn as in LEARN.com. And you will find a whole bunch of free tutorials there. They cover Photoshop, they cover Lightroom, they're now covering mobile editing. There's a whole bunch of downloads, things like Photoshop actions and brushes, color grading LUTs, Lightroom presets. It's all there. Definitely go and check it out. Aaron, thank you so much for coming and joining us. And I believe you've got a little bit of a discount code for our Shutter Zinc listeners.
Yeah, we do. We're offering a 20% discount for anyone who's listening to this. And Bruce, I believe you have the code in front of you?
I do. It is Shutters20. So if you want to head on over to FLEARN.com and grab yourself anything that you haven't already subscribed to or bought or whatever, use that code at the checkout and get a 20% discount.
Yeah, perfect. And it's just a monthly subscription. So, we offer a discount for annual as well. So basically you just, one time and then you get access to everything on the website.
Nice. Oh, I think we're done.
All right. That was nice and easy. Thank you so much.
Mate, not a problem, and great to have you along.
Shutter Zinc. Another audio2you.com quality podcast. For questions, comments, and feedback, email theboys@shutterzincpodcast.com.